I want to thank you for joining me today for our program, Keeping It Real and Relevant. And I'm looking forward to this week's topic because I think it's one that, you know, I kind of almost feel a little maybe like what Peter felt like when Jesus gave him the keys to the kingdom. And this one item, this one topic, I didn't realize how far it would take me in understanding the scriptures, but neither did I realize how far it would take you, my listeners and my readers that read my books that I've had published, how far it's taken you guys in understanding the scriptures. I started teaching this subject back in 2004 when the Lord gave me this particular topic to teach as a Bible, a Sunday school class, an adult Sunday school class. And after the class was over, after the 12 weeks or 13 week session was over, I had numerous men and women both come up to me and tell me that they thanked me for teaching this subject, and then they told me that as an adult, it's the first time that they had ever learned anything in a Sunday school class. And one man in particular, him telling me this, I mean, that's exactly what he said to me. He says, as an adult, he says, I've never learned what I've learned from your class in a Sunday school class. And he thanked me for teaching the topic. So with that being said, allow me to jump into what I've been telling you about all week, that I'm going to be providing you with one key that will unlock all the scriptures in the Bible, just like the one key unlocks the door to your house or your car. And it's going to be your all-access pass key to understanding the scriptures in a whole new way and in a whole new light. So let's get started right in with this program. You know, it's an interesting fact that for thousands of years, the Jewish people, the Jewish rabbis particularly, have understood the concept and this one key that I'm going to be sharing with you today. And that key is called covenant. And it's the one key that if you'll hang with me and listen as I'm kind of giving you a brief overview of this topic of covenant, because 30 minutes isn't really sufficient to do this topic justice. But I wanted to give you an overview, because that seems to be the questions that are being emailed and to me here lately from these broadcasts is, you know, how to understand and dissect these scriptures. And the Jewish rabbis have known this and understood the concept of covenant and what covenant really means. So allow me, I go into more detail on this particular subject in my recently published book, Handbook for Sharing Your Faith Effectively. In the last third of the book, I go into what I call the dimensions, the three dimensions of covenant. And I'm going to kind of give you a brief overview today of what that means and give you the key to being able to read the scriptures and understand them in a whole new light when you have this all-access pass key to the scriptures. And your first question is probably going to be, well, what is covenant? The simple answer is that covenants are agreements between two or more parties coming together for a common cause or goal. And throughout this broadcast, I'm going to be expounding some on that and giving you a further explanation on it. You know, how many times have we entered into a covenant agreement without ever having a clue that we've made a covenant agreement? that is actually binding, and many times we should be treating them more seriously than we do. There are three dimensions of covenant agreements that you can find throughout the Bible, and each of them carries some commonalities. All covenant agreements will have terms of agreements by one or both of the parties that are involved. All covenant agreements will be sealed with some form of acceptance by one or both of the parties. All covenant agreements will have terms for one or both of the parties to comply with, and the consequences for failing to comply with the terms and conditions of the agreement. And finally, all covenant agreements will fall into one of two categories, either conditional or unconditional, meaning that either party will be bound to the conditions of the agreement, or in the case of unconditional covenant agreements, one or all the parties are not bound to any conditions for the covenant to remain in force. The three dimensions of covenant agreements are an agreement between men with other men, which includes leaders of countries with other countries, such as the peace treaties and trade agreements. Men with God, where oftentimes men will make agreements with God regarding life situations. But God was not the originator of such a covenant agreement, but will accept the person's willingness to try such an agreement. An example of this type of a covenant originating with man are agreements that I will not do this or that if you, God, will do this thing or that thing for me. You know, it's kind of like what Gideon did, you know, when he kept throwing out the fleeces. You know, if it's dry on the ground and the fleece is wet, then I know it's you. And then the second time or the third time, I don't remember the sequence of events, but then the next time was the fleece had to be dry and the ground had to be wet. And that was his type of a covenant agreement about, I'll do this or I won't do this based on what you, God, do. And that's kind of a light-hearted example, but I think you understand what I'm talking about. And the final dimension of a covenant agreement is where God is the originator of the covenant with man. Such is the case with the Ten Commandments that was given to Moses on Mount Sinai. God originated the covenant, and man accepts them as an agreement between him and God. Remember, if you will, the story of when Moses came down after the Ten Commandments were written on the tablets and so forth, and he spoke them in the words of the hearing of all the children of Israel. Furthermore, the ultimate covenant agreement that Jesus fulfilled was a God-originated covenant between himself and man, with which our faith has, as a Christian, is established firmly upon. Throughout our lives, we all have conditional and unconditional covenant agreements, and we should be considering them a little more carefully than what we do at times. A prime example of covenant agreement that was broken and the consequences or impacts that they had on ordinary people's lives were the contracts written and sold during the mortgage crisis of 2008. These home loans were covenant contracts between men that many times knew that the person whom they were making the contract with were not going to be able to live up to the conditions described within those agreements. Hence, the housing crisis. So allow me to begin breaking down the three dimensions for you very quickly for our program today on covenant. As I stated, the first dimension of covenant agreements are covenants between men, or man with man. You'll find these agreements primarily throughout the Old Testament. And allow me to continue. Covenants between men include treaties, alliances, alliance agreements, business contracts, and covenants among friends, whether it's written or unwritten. In each of these, a covenant agreement has been created and carries with them conditions that each party expects to take place within the agreement or covenant. Let's begin first by exploring treaties and alliance agreements. Treaties and alliance agreements are typically formed between countries for the purpose of trading goods, services, protection, or even when declaring war or peace with rival nations. There are always people behind these agreements, and that's why they are listed within the context of covenants between men. And I don't know this to be a fact. I'm not saying thus saith the Lord on this, but allow me to interject, if you will, that I think the reason why we are given in the Old Testament so many examples of covenant agreements of men with men is God had to give an example when he was giving the scriptures to us. He had to put down that some way to describe to us or to give us an understanding of what it means to be in a covenant relationship. And with these examples that he's given throughout the Old Testament, for treaties, for, you know, there's the covenant of the shoe, you know, where a person will take off a shoe as an agreement to the covenant. And you find that in the book of Ruth, when Ruth had followed her mother-in-law because her husband had died, her mother-in-law's son had died and left her a widow, and Ruth was being allowed to be married to another person within the family, and a covenant was given. If you read that story in the book of Ruth, you'll see that a shoe was a binding factor in that covenant agreement. Another prime example of a modern day example of this type of agreement is the treaty or the alliance agreement that is mired in so much controversy today. You know, the Middle East Peace Treaty between Israel and the Palestinian people. It is appropriately called the Land for Peace Deal, which is just another term for a covenant agreement. In this covenant, the Palestinians want Israel to give up land in order to have peace within their borders. Notice both parties have items that they must perform in order for the covenant to be accepted and a covenant resolution made. An example of an alliance agreement is a contract between companies that agrees to conduct business in conjunction with each other for the fulfillment of business projects or ventures. Such alliances are formed to help each organization involved control their costs of doing business and will oftentimes be limited in nature to a particular service or product. Prime example of this type of alliance agreement is your cell phone and your service providers. Have you ever noticed that many times certain phones are only available from certain providers? This is because of an alliance covenant agreement between two or more businesses. In the business world, a business is treated like individuals. And thus is the reason that this type of alliance agreement is still considered a covenant between men. And the word men is being totally gender neutral here, folks. Women can enter into covenant agreements just as men. And when I refer to men, I mean just mankind. Business contracts are considered covenant agreements between men because they stipulate monetary contributions in exchange for services rendered. Another example of a business contract is the mortgage on your home. The lender has agreed to lend you the money that you need in order to purchase your home. The loan documents that you sign at the closing table of the deal are considered covenant agreements between you and the lender that you will repay the lender the money that they have provided for you to purchase your home. And they have agreed to a particular interest rate in exchange for that loan. The agreement is limited to you paying off the agreement and thereby dissolving or completing the covenant items contained within the contract. Another example of a business contract would be a contract that many sign in the corporate world. These contracts are covenant agreements between employers and employees, stating the amount of compensation the employee will receive for their services rendered as an employee. This too is a covenant agreement. And so as you're reading through the scriptures, you can tell pretty quickly, especially in the Old Testament, whether it's two men making an agreement or a king with a king making an agreement and so forth. And that's why, you know, you'd see timber exchanged for artists or in carpentry work in building of the temple. Those were covenant agreements. And so that's the first dimension to a covenant agreement is man with man. Some scriptural references just for your private study. You can find in 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 3 and 4, it says, "Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt." See, there was an exchange going on. 2 Samuel chapter 9, verses 1 and verse 7. "Now David said, 'Is there still anyone who is left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?' So David said to him, 'Do not fear, for I will surely show you kindness for Jonathan your father's sake, and I will restore to you all the land of Saul, your grandfather, and you shall eat bread at my table continually.'" See, this type of an agreement didn't end at the death of Jonathan and Saul. It actually, David shows us a very clear example that when he made that covenant agreement with Jonathan that day, that it extended to his family and down the line. And when Saul and Jonathan were killed in battle, David wanted to continue to be able to uphold his covenant agreement that he had made with Jonathan. And so that's, you know, as you look through the different scriptures of the Old Testament, you can see this very vividly, and it will begin to open up the scriptures to you in a whole new light. Now, the second dimension of covenant agreements that we find throughout the Bible is our covenant agreements, men with God. And we've heard it said many times throughout our lives, not to make a vow to God that you can't keep. However, how many of us really understand that a vow is a covenant agreement? That is exactly what this statement means. Don't make a covenant agreement with God that you can't keep. There are several examples, and let me give you one key verse of scripture for this particular dimension. And it comes, a dimension of covenant, and it comes from Proverbs chapter 20, verse 25. "It is a snare for a man to devote rashly something as holy and afterwards to reconsider his vow." And what that's telling us is, you know, people jump out here a lot of times, you know, when they're in tragic situations, and I unfortunately I understand that Denver and the Colorado area are experiencing some of those tragic situations right now with all the wildfires going on, and there's a lot of times possibly people going, you know, making covenants or vows to God about, oh, please save my home. You know, I'll do this and this for the rest of my life if you'll just please save my home. And that's one that's done rashly in haste, and one that may not be able to be kept. And so we know that is a snare to us, because it will, and the reason why it's a snare, it's not like God's going to strike you down if you don't live up to that agreement. But how it's a snare is because of the guilt that you will feel if you make these type of agreements with God in a rash or hurried manner. And allow me to show you one example out of the scriptures that this was a rash vow that this person had made. And we find this verse of scripture in Judges chapter 12, verses 29 through 35. And I'm not going to read it all here for time's sake, but here's what one particular person said in the heat of the moment or the heat of the battle. He says, if you, meaning he was speaking to God, will indeed deliver the people of Ammon into my hands, then it will be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the people of Ammon shall surely be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt sacrifice. You see, he was thinking that maybe a dog would run out to meet him, or a goat, or whatever, or, you know, be the first thing out of the house. But let me show you that the first thing that came out of the house as he was returning from this victory of battle was actually something that he was not well pleased in with the fact, and started the blame game. And you can read that whole story, but, you know, who came out of the house after his victory was his daughter. And he starts screaming at her, you know, that she had brought him very low, and that she was the cause of those that troubled him, you know, and started just really, you know, browbeating her for being the first one out the door of the house to greet him from his victory. That's the evidence of a harsh or rashly said or stated vow. Because he had no idea that it would be his daughter to come out of the house. And now he was obligated, because he vowed to offer up as a burnt sacrifice whoever or whatever came out of his house first to greet him. And so it creates a situation where it's just not good. And you can read the entire story for yourself. And I don't think that it would have been a situation where God would have required him to sacrifice his daughter as he had suggested. But at the same time, I think God is just giving this to us as an example of how we really need to take more seriously covenant agreements and vows and so forth, and not to make a vow out of haste because we're in some tragic event. Now, I must apologize to you. Our time is running short, and so I'll have to continue this teaching on the one key, you know, your all-access pass to understanding the scriptures in a whole new light next week on our program. And I look forward to seeing you or having you join me again next Saturday for the continuation and the conclusion of this. God bless you, and I look forward to you joining me next week on our program, Keeping It Real and Relevant.